From KXJZ in Sacramento, I'm Jeffrey Callison. California has the nation's biggest prison population, so it also has a huge population of former prisoners re-entering or trying to re-enter society. We'll talk about the challenges today on Insight. The challenges are great. It can be hard to find a job and a decent place to live when you have a record. But some make it. One of my guests is a former prisoner. 6 years on, she seems to be doing well. I'll also talk with a parole agent and a service provider who works with young people who've done time for serious or violent offences. First, the news. KXJZ in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Jeffrey Callison. California has a huge population of former prisoners re-entering or trying to re-enter society, a result of having the nation's biggest prison population. While it's in everyone's best interest that a former prisoner make a success of re-entering society, there are many obstacles. It can be hard to find a job and a decent place to live when you have a record. There's also a great need among many former inmates for substance abuse treatment and other forms of counseling. Some former prisoners make it, and we'll hear from one today. I'll also talk with a parole agent and two service providers, one of whom works with young people who've done time for serious or violent offences. Let's start with Christy Shows. She's Regional Inmate Employability Coordinator for the Prison Industry Authority in Sacramento and is a former inmate. Christy Shows, welcome to Insight.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Well, we're going to focus on your current life, but in order to put your current life in perspective, I'd like to start with your previous life. Tell us, please, about your time in prison. Why were you incarcerated?
I was incarcerated for the crime of arson and solicitation of arson.
Okay. And how much time did you spend in prison?
I spent 3 years.
Okay. And where was that?
Valley State Prison for Women in Chowchilla.
Okay. And what kind of prison is that? Or prisons are they?
I would say it's a high maximum security prison, like most in California.
And could you just describe for us life in prison, specifically how you responded to it, how you saw your time there and what you were going to do when you got out?
You have a lot of time to think and reflect. And I was tired of being subject to my addiction. And prison
addiction?
Crystal meth. Just the whole lifestyle, all that goes with it. And prison can be a very humiliating experience. And I felt I had to embrace that humiliation because that's the only way you can overcome it. If you're constantly being a victim and blaming others, then you're never going to make a success. You have to take responsibility for what you did.
So was there a change in you when you were in prison, or did the change start before you were in prison?
The big change comes after you're incarcerated.
Yes.
You know, when you're told when to eat, when to use the bathroom, when you can speak, when you can't speak, that's a real eye-opener. And you start looking back at what your lifestyle, where it has taken you. And I didn't like the space I was in and decided it was time to change.
Did you manage to overcome your addiction when you were in prison?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Was that because you just decided to do it yourself, or was it part of a program?
I had the opportunity to work for Prison Industry Authority while I was incarcerated, and that was a huge part of it. I think it's important to mix. You know, there's a certain level of humiliation, but at the same time, when you have a place you can, a refuge away from that, and that was the PIA factory I was in. I had the opportunity to work at the optical factory there. And it's a real business, and you interacted with people like you do every day in a real business, and that gave you, you know, some self-worth, some self-esteem, and it was great.
How did that come about? Did you learn about the PIA factory and ask if you could do it, or did someone come to you and say, you know what, maybe you should do this?
I had the opportunity to get in the eyewear class, which is a classroom setting, and it teaches you the optical skills, and from there you transition into Prison Industry Authority factory, And yes, I requested to get into the eyewear factory because I knew where it would lead.
What skills did you learn in doing that?
All the optical skills required to make eyewear. And you can get a job at any doctor's office, major optical company with those skills.
Mm. And what was your job history, very briefly, before you went to prison? And basically, I'm asking, you know, did you learn more general job skills and work habits when you were in the PIA factory?
My experience was mostly outside sales. So I learned some real-world technical skills in the factory that I had never been used to. You know, as an outside salesperson, you tend to work by yourself a lot and have a lot of freedom. This was more of an 8-to-5 atmosphere, working with a lot of people. There are a lot of things that have to come together to create a piece of eyewear, and that's what Prison Industry Authority taught me to do.
Mm-hmm. My guest is Christy Shows. She's Regional Inmate Employability Coordinator for the Prison Industry Authority in Sacramento, and she was released from prison 6 years ago. You said that that going to the PIA factory helped you get through the various hardships of being in prison. Did it also point you to a future?
Without Prison Industry Authority and the optical experience, yeah, I would like to think that you make it regardless, but it gave me a career.
Had you already dealt with your meth addiction before you started at the PIA factory, or did that happen after you started work?
Just the work itself is therapy. And, you know, I pretty much use mind over matter. I did a lot of reading. Once you get off work, of course, you don't have a lot to do but sit and think or read, or I didn't like the day room and watch TV. So I did a lot of reading and a lot of research on my own. We do have a library there. And, you know, you just have to take it upon yourself to move yourself forward, move you out of that space. And once you're clean for a certain amount of time, it becomes easier and easier.
Yes. How interested were the other inmates that you were in contact with in learning job skills and signing up at the PIA factory?
Oh, extremely. It's a very sought after position within the institutions, because first of all, you're making money in the prison to provide you with the things that you need, and they know that it's acquiring skills that you can use in the real world. Mm-hmm. It's a highly sought after position. They're typically waiting lines to get on a PIA job.
When you were released from prison, how much did you know about what you were going to be doing?
Once they heard of the experience that I had, I actually was offered 3 different positions, turned 2 of them down, and chose the one I thought would fit me best.
Mm. How typical was that experience of compared to other people coming out of prison?
You know, I can't speak for anyone else. I don't know how typical that is, but I can say with the experience that I had, they were very eager to get me on board.
They being?
The employer, mm-hmm, or employers. When I told them that typical Prison Industry Authority optical factory pumped out 1,300 jobs a day versus your... when I last left the company I worked for, a very, very busy office, 125 jobs a day was a huge day.
Mm. Why were these employers so eager to hire you?
Because of the skills I had.
Mm. And was that because of you, or is it because the PIA factory really teaches a lot of valuable job skills and produces a lot of skilled people?
Well, of course, it has to be both. You have to interview well. You have to let them know how enthusiastic you are, how much you want the job. And I obviously needed a job very badly. They did start me out part-time, probably at the lowest wage that they offered, because they knew I was going to be a risk, and I certainly didn't mind that. I told them, let me, you know, get my foot in the door, and I will make you look good. Mm. Everybody wants a success story, and I will be your success story.
We're talking today about life after prison. My guest, Christy Shows, is Regional Inmate Employability Coordinator for the Prison Industry Authority, and she is a former inmate. Also with us in our studio is Melinda Silva. She's a parole agent in Sacramento. She actually joined us by phone a few weeks ago when we did a program about training programs inside prisons. So, Melinda, welcome back to Inside.
Thank you.
In your experience, how many former inmates make a success of parole?
Well, I think the numbers recidivism rate would indicate very small percentages, but even what we actually see, it's a very small number. Even those that ultimately get off because they do all their time are not successful in the sense that they've addressed their addiction and or found solid employment and have become self-sufficient.
Mm. Are there common denominators among the people who do make a success of parole? Is it possible to even flag people when they're coming out of prison? This is someone who's quite likely to make a success of parole, and this is someone who's probably not going to make a success of it?
I think being able to find a job, if they have any job history or job skills, that's a big factor. A lot of them seem to always go back to their family and can sort of just be supported by them. But if you see
so
someone...
So who they were, what they did before prison is a big factor.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And when you look at the whole picture, and there are in-house drug programs, those people that have utilized the programs while they were incarcerated on their own volition certainly are more motivated to succeed in the community and tap into the community resources. I have not seen a lot of come out that have been able, obviously the numbers are small, that can utilize prison industry within the facilities. So I haven't seen a lot of those people. And so this is sort of a first experience for me talking to Christy also.
Are there any other positive signs in someone coming out of prison that when you see, you go, great, this is someone I can maybe work well with?
I think the ones that actively seek out the things that they need to do, either ask for referrals to employment sources or ask for drug treatment referrals before they're back so deeply entrenched in their drug addiction that it's harder to get them back, you know, sort of on the straight and narrow again.
And what would be discouraging signs for you when you first meet someone?
The ones that come out and simply start asking for money, they sort of get a flyer that comes out of prison saying they're entitled to loans or their parole agent will give them money or food vouchers or clothing vouchers and sort of just want a basic handout.
Yeah. Could you give us just a quick definition of what exactly parole is and how it works?
Once someone has been sentenced to state prison for a felony conviction, they serve their time in a state institution, and then after serving their time with the good time or whatever time is taken off their sentence, they come out to a parole period of 3 years, and they're under parole supervision with a parole agent for 3 years. They can get off early if they do well. They could get off parole in 13 months if there's no violations and they do all the things that they're supposed to do.
And where do they go? Where are you sent to when you are on parole?
They're required to go back legally to their county of last legal residence, which is the residence that was either on their police report or probation report when they went to prison. So it may be where they grew up and where they lived. It may be where they sort of just landed and committed a felony and they have no ties to that community. And those individuals have a very difficult time if they're in an area where there's no family support or no area where they know people.
Melinda Silva is a parole agent in Sacramento. Christy, we were just talking there with Melinda about characteristics and traits in people that would suggest that they can maybe make a real success of parole and others that might not make a success. Did that sound right to you, what you were hearing? And did you see those traits in other inmates?
Yes, I did. While I was incarcerated, I could sit around the day room and think, you know, you've got a great chance. You'll do fine. And at the same time, I saw those that were looking for the free ride, you know, always playing somebody for a victim. And it was usually very apparent for those that were going to get out, really try if they had the resources or the ability once they were released to be able to reenter nicely. The problem I saw was, like she said, many were going to places where they didn't have any support and they knew it. And, you know, you could see the gnashing and, you know, wringing of hands, knowing that it was going to be very difficult for them.
What kind of support did you have? You did get a job and you even had options.
Yes, I did. And I had the support of my family, which was absolutely key.
Where was that?
That was in Visalia.
Okay. Is that where you'd been living before?
Yes, it was.
Okay. So you lived with your family for a while, and
For a
very short period. Mm-hmm. What was it like finding a place to live not too long after you'd been released from prison?
You have to take baby steps. You know, you start with a very small apartment. You know, you get basic transportation, and I do mean basic, and you just have to take baby steps. You can't you have to have high expectations, but at the same time, you don't want to bite off more than you can chew, and your expectations get ahead of you, and you can't get out and want a job that's going to pay you $50,000 a year, and you can run out and buy a Cadillac and, you know, have a certain, what would you say, a class. You have to take baby steps and take it easy and do what you can do and make sure it's manageable.
You said you get basic, very basic transportation. What do you mean? As someone who's just come out of prison, you get
something that goes from your front door and to work and back. You know, no bells and whistles, just your basic transportation. Something with wheels and a steering wheel that will, run.
Yes. And did you have any problems with landlords when you were looking for places to stay?
No, I did not. That typically did not come up. When you're looking for it, it's when you're looking for a job that's usually the issue. And I actually got in a position where I was able to hire and fire with a major optical company. And, that's always an issue. You know, there's always.
Okay. And we'll talk more about employment a little later on the program. But Melinda, how important are those first few days or first few weeks when someone comes out of prison?
They're critical. They originally get their $200, which is their gate money, and that may have to buy them clothing and or transportation from whatever prison they're being released from.
Doesn't go far, does it?
It does not go very far. So if they don't have some family member in the community in which they can go and initially reside, they're either in a shelter or on the streets. And that's very difficult to find employment when you don't have a way to get around. And
what do you recommend someone do with their $200 if they don't have family to go and stay with?
Well, it's usually spent by the time they get to us, so I don't have to make any recommendations.
Really?
But they buy clothing. They may use it for a couple nights of a motel room just to sort of get the feel of freedom and sort of savor that. But it's pretty much gone usually by the time they get to us.
So what happens then?
Then they may start asking for assistance from parole, which is not in abundance.
This is your famous blank check.
The blank check they would like to get. The funding's limited. The high-risk sex offenders, the violent offenders, those tend to be the ones that the funds are used on more readily. So for someone who comes out with just a basic record of drugs or theft, there's really no resources, and they would basically be referred to a homeless shelter. And some communities have those, and some don't really even have those with bed space available.
Why are your discretionary funds typically used on the most serious and sexual offenders?
Well, I think they believe that those are the ones that are at more risk to reoffend with vulnerable victims. So they try and have them accountable where we can know where they are and supervise them readily.
And Christy, as someone who came out of prison yourself, does that seem right to you? Does it seem appropriate to use these limited funds to help people with the most serious offenses behind them?
It would seem so. What you have to understand is whether we like it or not, the parolees are coming back to your communities. And, we're landing, so to speak, at your front door. So I think it is important that you know where they are and you can keep tabs on them. Whether... there's always the dilemma of what do you do with those high risk. And I think it's very important to be able to have your finger on the pulse with.
Mm. This is Insight from KXJZ. Coming up, more on life after prison. We'll be right back. This is Insight from KXJZ. I'm Jeffrey Callison. You can hear today's show and recent archive programs on the web at capradio.org/insight. Our topic today, life after prison. My studio guests are Melinda Silva, a parole agent in Sacramento, and Christy Shows, who works with the Prison Industry Authority in Sacramento. And she was released from prison herself 6 years ago. Christy, how often do people, setting aside employers and landlords, mm-hmm. how often do people in general find out that you serve time in prison? And more importantly, how do they react to you?
You know, I typically get just sort of the raised eyebrow and kind of surprised because I have been so successful. And of course, they all, everyone wants to know about life behind bars and what prison really is like and if it's that, if it's as dangerous as people think. But I've been very fortunate. There have been a few raised eyebrows and those that didn't like into it very well and seemed a little apprehensive. But, you know, those aren't typically the ones that I share my company with for whatever reason.
Have you ever been held back from doing something or from doing anything, I guess, because someone found out about your past?
Possibly. I think there may have been times where maybe a promotion didn't come, perhaps because of my record. I can't know that for sure. There were situations where we would have loss prevention issues. And I know that was always in the back of their mind at a location I was working at. If
the what? That you might steal from them or something
like
that?
You know, if when it occurred, I know that the investigative process that was, I was always one that they looked at. Of course, nothing ever came of it because, you know, those are not the things I did. But I know that always raised an eyebrow.
Mm. Even though your sentence was not for theft or burglary or anything like that?
Well, they... it was common knowledge. I never really hid my offense or what brought me there. I was a drug addict, and you know, with that comes all the things that come with being addicted to drugs, which is typically, you know, crime and theft.
Mm. And Melinda, how does the corrections department decide who's a good candidate for parole?
It's just decided by law. After they serve a certain amount of their sentence, everyone would get a parole period except for those serving life without parole who have to go in front of a Board of Prison Terms parole board.
And at that point, do they have specific guidelines or is it subjective?
As far as
for
releasing
the board,
them on parole?
Yeah.
I don't know the exact intricacies of that, but I think they have a panel and the victims come in if there were victims of their crime and then they listen and I think they have to meet mm-hmm. certain criteria according to their standards.
Joining us on the phone is Jack Miklos. He's Deputy Director of Second Chance, which offers reentry services to former inmates in San Diego. He runs the job and housing operations. Jack Miklos, welcome to Insight.
Thank you.
What's the scale of this issue for California, this large number of people coming out of prison and trying to reenter society with varying degrees of success?
Well, I think you've already mentioned that California has the largest prison population in the United States. Ironically, six of the top 10 counties in the nation are from Los Angeles County South. San Diego currently ranks fourth in the nation with the number of returning offenders coming back to its community.
And you're in Southern California. Why so many in Southern California?
Good question. We've heard that there is a prevalence of addiction issues related to criminal activity. Parts of San Diego have quite a reputation for being meth labs of the nation here, proximity to the border. I won't blame it all on drug addiction.
So what does this mean for the communities in those areas? What are they doing, places like San Diego, in your opinion, are they doing enough to deal with this tidal wave of people coming out of prison?
A lot of it. San Diego, we initially, back in year 2001, began reentry roundtables, bringing providers together to talk about the reentry issues. And we brought law enforcement, parole, corrections, community-based, faith-based organizations together to discuss the situation, because I think it was mentioned earlier, the fact is that our prison inmates will be coming home. A high percentage of individuals that are currently incarcerated will return to the communities of their discharge at some point in the future. And are we prepared for it? Community awareness is a part of it, educating the community. So that former offender label doesn't stick, and they're not viewed as it, that is what they are. Mm. They committed a crime, they served their time, and that always has to be, you know, for public safety, has to be recognized, but it can't be how they're viewed in the community's eye.
Yeah. What are the biggest challenges you see facing former prison inmates as they reenter society?
Oh, the big four, and I know that it's the same in California as it is nationally. You're looking at employment, housing, addiction issues, and mental and medical health issues. Those are the four primary categories that pose the most obstacles to inmates returning to their communities, regardless if it's California or New York or Texas.
And which of those would you say is the biggest challenge, either because former inmates are the least receptive to that, or because the society at large has problems with it, or because there just isn't enough money and human resources to deal with it?
Well, you take them in order of priority. Once released, housing is going to be the first obstacle that they stumble across. We heard $200 in gate money. They may have some money on the books if they were fortunate to be engaged in a work program where they were institutionalized. But again, they more than likely will be released without any forms of ID. So trying to get a place to rent is going to be very difficult. They've been out of circulation for a period of time. So having a current rental history, having current resources, employment, income, background is going to be very difficult for them to access immediate housing. Homeless shelters, right now, for the most part, an inmate released today would not be able to access homeless services until tomorrow, which means that they need to be out on the streets for 24 hours, and that 24-hour period is the most critical period for somebody returning to the community. It gives them the opportunity to reengage with old cohorts that may have been part of the problem that got them into trouble, reengagement with drugs and alcohol. So having a safe and stable housing environment initially upon release is probably one of the most critical factors, and a lot of them cannot return to their families.
Jack Miklos is Deputy Director of Second Chance in San Diego. Melinda, how often do you actually see a parolee in those first 24 hours?
They're required to report the first business day, the first working day after their release. The high controls we see sooner, but if they get released on a Friday, we don't see them until Monday. So what he's saying is correct. They have that first night out the next day. And so there's that period in which they usually hook up with someone. And part of it is just survival. It's a place to sleep, whether it's a flop house or a old neighborhood place to go. But I think what he's saying is pretty accurate.
And when the parolee's taken out of prison, they're taken back to their county where they were from. But where exactly are they put? I mean, the bus or whatever is, or the van has to stop somewhere and open the door. Where about?
Well, depending on what prison they're released from, they take a bus, a Greyhound, or whatever transportation they arrange for back to their county of last legal residence. So they may land in Sacramento downtown at the Greyhound bus station would be the first place they get off the bus from prison.
I see. And when you do see them, your first meeting with this parolee, what do you do? How long do you spend with them, and what exactly do you do with them?
Well, you do an initial interview, which is discuss where they're going to be living, what resources are available, which are not a lot for us to offer them places, but we find out where they're going to live, if they need certain things immediately, may give them some bus tickets, and then they get a referral to our orientation, which is a fairly new phenomena, in which there are service providers every Tuesday that parolees are required to go to following their release. But that might be a week or two after their release that they get to that Tuesday orientation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Christine, any thoughts on this discussion?
You know, what he mentioned earlier is absolutely true. If, you know, your parolees are going to go back to the only thing they know if they do not have the services or resources to not revert back and end up back in prison. You must have a place to go. You must have food to eat. And too many of them were not lucky as I was and had a family to go to. If they know one thing, they know how to hustle. They know how to steal, and they know how to sell drugs. And if you don't offer them an alternative, that's all they know, and that's what they will do. They must survive.
Obviously, prison is a rough place to be, but Christy, when you were inside, were there inmates who were dreading being released because of the uncertainty facing them?
I have seen people actually lose their date simply because they did not have things set in place for when they were released. They would do something wrong, get in a fight.
Deliberately.
Deliberately to keep from being released because they were not prepared.
My goodness. Jack Miklos, you work with... Part of your responsibility is supervising some of the work-related programs for re-entering people from prisons.
Correct.
And I noticed that you have more than 250 employers recruited in San Diego, or rather, more than 250 employers in San Diego have hired graduates of the organization you work for, Second Chance. What do you do to recruit employers to hire re-entering former inmates?
Well, my workforce development program is a STRIVE model. It was originally founded in East Harlem, New York. It was featured on a national broadcast. We try to learn about the employer and what their needs are. For instance, I want someone to hire an individual for what they can offer that employer, not because that they were a homeless individual, a former offender, a former addict. If we do it that way, there's never finger pointing when a placement doesn't go right and they say, see, they're a program people. They have to hire them as an individual who can be an added asset to the employer. So knowing what the employer is looking for, what their hiring criteria is, who they can and who they can't hire, and not to try to change their hiring policy, but to work with their hiring policy and prepare the individuals for those interviews, how to answer the hard question about maybe a former offense that they had committed.
What are the kinds of businesses or industries that would be more likely to hire former inmates?
San Diego it lacks a lot of large industries. About 94% of all the employers here have 8 or less employees. So it's a variety of employer types. We place a lot of individuals in construction and trades industry. We've done clerical and office work. We have placed a former PIA optical individual into an optical lab here locally. They have the validated certificates and capacity to do the job. So we try to look at what they've done in the past and the skills that they may present. We've had folks do anything from entry level at minimum wage to individuals that have come to us who were former union labor individuals that were making $40 an hour.
What's the motivation for these employers? What do they get out of it?
Well, they are eligible. If they hire a former offender, they are eligible for Work Opportunity Tax Credit, or WOTC as it's called, which would allow them for tax credit benefits at the end of the year. And any former offender can offer bonding for their employer if there is some question about loss of property or material things, tools, money.
Is the tax credit significant?
You're going to ask me a tough question here. The last I knew, it was running about $3,500 a year for per individual. And I believe the employers had roughly 15 years to utilize that. So,
Christy Shows, what's your impression of employers who hire former inmates? What, in your experience, what's motivating them?
You know, they're looking for skills. If you have the skills, they can. They'll overlook the fact that you've done time. You know, I always, and most of us know, I always say we're all one eyewitness away from doing time. And I think a lot of society will tend to overlook that. If you can offer something, if you have good, hard skills that you can offer an employer, you can get hired. You certainly can. And, you know, I hate to sound like a commercial for Prison Industry Authority, but that's the factories that we have in the institutions offer that. So, you know, you can overlook a lot if you've got some good skills under your belt.
What do you recommend a former inmate do when they get to the almost inevitable part of the job application form that says, do you have a criminal record?
Tell the truth.
Obviously, you tell the truth. Mm-hmm. But what do you do about that? Because it must be, I can imagine your heart sinks when you get to that question
you
and
just
you
have
realize
to own
you've
up.
Got to check yes.
You just have to own up. You have to admit that you made a mistake. You let them know that. I can tell you what I did. You know, I told him I've already been back there. I've got no place to go but up. And that's exactly what I'm going to do. I will work hard. I will show up. I know my job. And I just encourage them to show the enthusiasm and to, you know, lay out their skills. You know, and I'm actually in a position now where I can hire and fire. And you're looking for someone that knows the job and that will show up. If an employer knows you're simply going to show up and walk through the door every day, you know, you're way ahead of the game. Mm-hmm. And I will encourage them to just let them know that I have the skills, and you will find no one that needs a job more than I will, and I will do the job and I will do it well.
And Melinda, as a parole agent, what do you say to parolees as they consider what they're going to do work-wise?
You know, that's a really big dilemma, and I think what she said is maybe what they need to do, but most of them also know as soon as they say they have a criminal record or they're on parole, they're shut down. They never get a return call, even if they do have the skills. So I think for a lot of the parolees out there, that doesn't work, and it's a huge dilemma. They have gaps in their resume, and unless they're in a job, a construction job or something in which theft is maybe not something that's real prevalent, you know, that there's this, unless they're responsible for others' tools or something, a lot of people are not willing to take that risk.
Yeah.
And people struggle with that every single day and ask us, what should we put? Because you can't tell them to lie. That's certainly not the way to get a good start on things. But if they don't say something, you know, they don't get the job.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think a lot of it is, a lot of them don't know how to present themselves. And they may tell the truth, but they do it in a way that, that's not very eloquent. And I think if you show up looking sharp, speaking sharp, and, you know, that's something that they really need to be taught before they're released. You know, you can't close the barn door after the horse is already out. You must address that before they leave. And I think that's very, very important to know how to interview.
Yes. And Jack Miklos, final question for
sure.
You. Some thoughts on finding housing. What are the issues facing former inmates, and what can they do about it?
Well, if they're coming to San Diego, they can always look us up. As far as housing, it's hopefully they've made reconnected. If they're returning to areas where there is family, that was a key factor that was brought up, so that they have that support. They may have the option of staying with family. Seek services. A lot of time folks just will simply not ask for the right help. And it varies from community to community. Some communities have much more as far as resources than others, and some are very limited.
Mm-hmm. I noticed that your organization has 6 houses in San Diego spread out all over the place, so in part so that the gang members and former gang members don't have to be placed in a rival gang's turf. Is that right?
That's right. We have 6 alcohol and drug-free sober living homes, so that we try to provide a safe environment for individuals that is with zero tolerance and alcohol-free, but also safe from any other outside influences, so that, again, they may not have the ease of being reconnected with former or rival gang members.
But that's rough, though, because, you know, if you go back to where you're from, then you're with your homies and you get into bad habits. And if you go somewhere else, you might be straying onto someone else's turf and they'll go after you.
Exactly. But the tie that we have in San Diego is our programs linked with our employment services program. So we'll provide you that 60 days of housing in a safe environment and have you participate in our 3-week job readiness training program, which, as you've heard, deals a lot with attitude, presentation, that former offender has to be okay with their conviction. They have to accept the fact that, you know, right or wrong, they were convicted, they served their time, and then they have to convince and make that employer feel comfortable with where they are today in their life and not where they were 5 years ago, maybe when they were first convicted.
Jack, thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
That's Jack Miklos, Deputy Director of Second Chance. It offers reentry services to former inmates in San Diego. My studio guests are Christy Shows from the Prison Industry Authority and Melinda Silva, a parole agent. This is Insight from KXJZ. Our topic today, life after prison. There's more just ahead. This is Insight from KXJZ. I'm Jeffrey Callison. Tomorrow in Insight, a new bill would create a process for regular raises in California's minimum wage. What impact would that have on businesses and workers? And is it the right approach? We'll find out with analysis from experts. Also, Jim Brazelton, the recently retired DA who was the lead prosecutor in the Scott Peterson trial. Today we're talking about life after prison. My studio guests, Christy Shows from the Prison Industry Authority. She's a regional inmate employability coordinator and is a former inmate herself. Also with us is Melinda Silva, a parole agent in Sacramento. Melinda, do many parolees get discharged early? In other words, the parole is going so well that they're discharged early?
I don't know what the numbers are, and I think it's sort of geographical. Some areas tend to let them off parole for different reasons, but usually if they have employment, stable residence, and there's been no violations, no indication of drug use, they can get off in 6 months unless they're a serious or violent offender.
In your experience, what percentage might that be, roughly?
I'm going to say it's small. I'm going to say I don't want to speculate a number, but I think it's a small number.
Okay. Christy, tell us about your current job with the Prison Industry Authority. What do you do?
As an inmate employability coordinator, I am responsible for interviewing inmates once they come into a PIA factory, orientating them into what that means, what the job requirements are, and what we have to offer, as well as performing exit interviews. We go through a roster, find out the needs that they may have, and try to accommodate them before they get out of prison. We teach them interviewing skills. And one thing that Prison Industry Authority is embarking on doing, we have a reentry model that we're setting up in San Diego, where we get all of the faith-based, it's interesting you had Jack on, he's actually involved in this, where we get all of the resources under one roof. We don't want to reinvent the wheel. There are many resources out there already available, but we want to pull them under one roof. We will transition that inmate to a transition coordinator, and that way they can meet those needs, whether it be housing, transportation, and also job referral.
When you're interviewing clients, do you tell them that you were in prison yourself once and a graduate of the PIA factory?
Yes, I do.
And what difference does that make?
It makes a huge difference. And I let them know I'm not the only one. I'm certainly not the only success story. There are many, many, many out there. But yeah, that's a huge boost for them.
Joining us on the phone is Mark Rosenbaum. He's project manager for Project Choice, the City of Oakland's reentry program for young men coming out of prison for serious and violent offenses. Mark, welcome to Insight.
Thanks, Jeffrey.
What special challenges do young people have reentering society after prison?
Well, if you're talking about the young people who are between the ages of 16 and 24, which are the folks that are coming out of the California Youth Authority, though that's not the current name of the agency's been changed, but their challenges are enormous. The average length of stay in the Youth Authority facilities is much longer than the average length of stay in the adult prison system, and so they've missed this whole maturation period. Usually they were in juvenile hall prior to that. So when they come out of Youth Authority, as an example, they're pretty much bewildered, beguiled, and confused, and you know, almost disassociative. You know, it's just so overwhelming to them. Most of them don't have intact families. They come into a transitional living situation that's been procured for them by the youth authority parole system, and it's just incredibly difficult. I mean, it just, the steps to success look so far apart that most of the young people coming out just don't even feel that it's possible.
Are there, it sounds like these young people are in special need of services and support when they get out. Are there enough services and support for them?
Absolutely not. If you just look at the folks coming out of foster care as an example, of those that graduate or leave foster care at the age of 18, over half of them during that next year will become homeless, I mean, throughout the state. So, and they're not even yet, they haven't committed any crimes. So, you know, I think we've poured a lot of resources into the process of incarcerating people and to keeping them in prison, and for a lot of good reasons. But as everybody has said, pretty much everybody that goes to prison and that goes to juvenile facilities, they come back. And we haven't really put hardly any money into resources. And it wouldn't be very expensive to provide, you know, money for reentry programs where there are folks that have been in prison and have successfully recovered, and there are counselors, and we get them, and they have enough funds to get emergency housing. They get these young people and the folks coming out of adult prisons tied into support groups and family reunification counseling. Mm-hmm. And get them some housing and get them bicycles and bus tokens and talk to them every day, then they begin to feel hopeful. And that's not a very expensive resource.
Yeah.
As it is now when they come out, they come out with $200, and over half the people coming out of the prison system spend their first night under a bridge somewhere.
How many, in your experience, how many of the young people coming out of prison in California, who many of them have spent their adolescence incarcerated, how many of them are actively searching for constructive support so that they can go straight?
Well, I think if they find a program like Second Chance, most every community has some kind of either drug program or community-based service program, and many of the faith-based organizations now have training and housing programs that are helpful. I think there are resources out there. You have to be assertive in looking for them. As the parole agent said, there's been a huge new momentum on the part of parole to have community-based providers come into a big location, have all the parolees that are being released that month or that week, once a week they come in and they see their parole agent, and then there are all these community-based resources, whichever ones they have in that county or that community, where these folks that are coming out of prison and out of the youth authority institutions, they can go there, they can find out what these resources are, and they can get connected rather than trying to wander around a city the size of San Diego or a city the size of Oakland.
Yeah.
Our particular project is based on the idea of doing pre-release work with prisoners that are coming out, and then once they're ready to come out, we actually go and meet them at the gate and then take them to a living situation that we've worked out with them prior to their release. And then we have support services on the outside to work with it's only a specifically small group, but we work with them on transition like that, and it's been quite successful.
Well, thanks very much, Mark, and best wishes.
Thank you.
That's Mark Rosenbaum of Project Choice in Oakland. Just a final question in our last couple of minutes for my two studio guests, Melinda Silva, parole agent. You've been a parole agent for about 10 years, I understand.
Yes.
What kind of changes have you seen over that time, better or worse?
I don't think I've really seen much in the way of changes. After I was contacted by your program, I actually found a letter to the editor I wrote to the Sacramento Bee a year ago after they wrote an article about rehabilitation. And in that year, I've seen no more increased services or availability of services. They add the name, but I don't think any agent out there has seen any changes. So I think it's pretty much been status quo.
And Christy shows, what advice do you have for people in the community, whether they're potential employers or potential co-workers or landlords or neighbors, about dealing with former inmates?
Most importantly, you need to give them a chance. you know, good people do bad things. And typically, you just want to come out and live your life and be able to feed your family and put a roof over your head. And it's very important that you don't look at them through that glass of just being an ex-con. If they simply had an opportunity for employment and to re-enter, they certainly would. We all have the dilemma. We do not know what to do with those that have never been habilitated to begin with. That's a whole nother subject.
Okay. Well, we're out of time. Thank you so much, Christy Shows, Regional Inmate Employability Coordinator with the Prison Industry Authority in Sacramento, and Melinda Silva, Parole Agent. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And that's Insight for today. I'm Jeffrey Callison. Today's associate producers were Tiffany Aldrich McBain and Patty Locallan. Insight's technical director is Mark Jones. Our senior producer, Benjamin Jonas Keeling. Thank you for joining us. Jeffrey Callison. On the next Insight, a new bill would create a process for regular raises in California's minimum wage. What impact would that have on businesses and workers, and is it the right approach? Also, the recently retired DA who was the lead prosecutor in the Scott Peterson trial. Join me for Insight.
Tomorrow afternoon at 2 on the KXJZ stations.